From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 25th day of February 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Dan O'Brien of K-State University will be here to take up the agricultural energies, and we'll discuss the weather forecast. To that with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's take a look at the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Tuesday afternoon. March corn for the day, a quarter higher at $3.72.5. The May at $3.76.5, up a quarter. In July at $3.80, higher. September at $3.78, down a quarter for the day. In December at $3.82.25. It finished unchanged on the afternoon. March soybeans for the day at $8.79, 4¾ higher. The May at $8.82. And a quarter, up 5¾. In July, $8.99¾, 5¾ higher. November at $9.10½, up 5½. Bean oil futures up 26 cents at $29.23. And the bean meal for the day at $2.86.50, 40 cents lower. Wheat futures, July contract at $5.37¼, up a half. The hard red July at $4.68¾, up 2¼. Live cattle futures in Chicago, February at $1.97½ higher at $1.15¼. Feeders in the March at $1.32.97½, $3.05 lower for the day. Those live cattle were lower, not up, by the way. Lean hogs in the April contract. This one is up a nickel at $64.67½. May at $71.97½, a dime higher on the afternoon. Crude oil for the day down $1.61 a barrel. Ethanol futures just about $0.01¢ lower. Heating oil or diesel fuel on a gallon down 4½ cents. And gasoline 8⅙, or rather a 1/10 of a cent lower. Natural gas is up $0.07, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average about 800 points lower. The U.S. dollar down 0.379, and the gold futures at $1,650.60, down $21.80 at this hour. We're now joined by Wayne Nelson here on the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. He's with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, to talk about the commodity markets and what's happening in Chicago. And I suppose we should start with New York, because this is the second big drop in the marketplace there in this week, and we're just 2 days in. What do we think about this one?
Epic pandemic sort of effect of the coronavirus and what it will have to the GDP across the world and what we're going. We saw China sort of lower their expectations, their continued 6% growth in GDP down to maybe 4.5%. And that, of course, is just sort of going across the world. When your second largest economy in the world says their economy's slowing by 1.5%, that's not a good sign.
So we have COVID-19 or coronavirus there having an impact on the GDP. We've known that for a while. They've been making some announcements. Italy over the weekend was the one that I think tipped the scale or looked like it did. And then there are some warnings out of Washington, D.C. that the U.S. can expect something similar, I suppose, to what's been happening in Italy. And that all has been congealing to put some real pressure in the financial markets. Does it spill over? I know it did yesterday, but does it really spill over into the commodities at all?
Yeah, it does as we look at things. It did more so in the gold, the silver, and the crude oil today, more so than it did the corn and the beans. But I mean, and whenever we affect the energies, we affect how ethanol and everything else reacts too, Todd. So it's spillover, but it wasn't near as disastrous in the grains as it was yesterday. I think this yesterday was the biggest loss in like the last 8 years in the Dow. So it was a very big day, and it was quite a shook things really up on Wall Street.
Did it shake farmers yesterday as well?
You couldn't find a happy one in my world, but we've had a lot of guys that have been hanging on, looking to do or just having marketer held back on selling some grain, and then going down and testing the lows yesterday. We felt a little bit of cheer this morning, and then by the time the day was over, we were back to about unchanged. So, just a little bit of pessimism floating around in the ag community right now, especially with no real announcements of China doing anything. But we do look like when we get to the first of the month here next week that China is going to be issuing some of their quotas that they can bring in tariff-free. And I think we can start to see some of that. Maybe we can get a little better feeling towards this market.
I suppose a couple of things will have happened by then. There may be some Chinese news that we can deal with. On the positive side, pressure in the marketplace from basis contracts either being fulfilled or rolled should subside as well. And we'll have the final numbers for crop insurance by then. So those things should all come together, I suppose. By the time we get to our All-Day-Ag Outlook meeting, we may have something more positive to talk about next week? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, we're sure hoping that it is. Like I said, I think that if we could see some something out of China where they're issuing tariff-free receipts to some of their customers that could have come in here and buy and help our market a little bit. We've been very impatient about all this. And, you know, and considering the coronavirus and the way that they're unable to unload ships and do everything over their way, it's not surprising that they're not doing it. There was talk that they've asked Brazil to hold back on some of the shipments of beans that they'd bought earlier just because they are getting clogged up over at their ports. So when we see that way, it's not like they're in a big hurry. The one thing that we have seen today really was they said a lot of end users were in there buying products today thinking this was maybe a good place to be pricing some stuff that way. So it's always good to see end users coming up, stepping up and buying, saying it's a bargain price to buy at.
And basis remains strong.
Basis continues to remain strong. It has to, with board going down, to keep product moving. You know, and we have a lot of places this year that were short harvest, and, you know, the basis is relocating corn and beans into some of those locations. And, you know, we've been very fortunate through the year. We've had the best basis levels we've ever had in this area through harvest and through this time period so far.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk to you actually at the Beef House next week.
We're looking forward to seeing everyone at the Beef House next week, and we'll have a lot of fun.
All right, that's Wayne Nelson. He is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, and next week he and a whole bevy of analysts will be with me over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. You can join us, too. In fact, I'd like you to do that. You can call 800-898-1065 right now if you'd like to buy your ticket, or go online to WILLAG.org and purchase that ticket for just $30 for the Beef House All Day Ag Outlook. Don Day is here. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, to help us take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. I want to stick with the United States today. We'll begin with the snowstorm that's working its way across a small part of the Midwest. Can you tell me about it?
Yeah, we have a system that's coming out of the Plain States that's throwing moisture this way. Already we've seen some areas of rain and snow, and as the system progresses east tonight, and into Wednesday and Thursday, we'll see it get more organized. It does look like during the day tomorrow, central and southern Illinois into Indiana, parts of Ohio into the southern Great Lakes, going to be looking at some areas of rain, and some of that's going to be turning over to snow as cold air comes in the backside of it. This system will then go into New England, northeast United States, bringing winter weather its way. Some colder air will come in behind the system for some pretty chilly temperatures here to wrap up the last days of February.
So if we do get snow, it's going to stick around, I take it.
It looks like it. You know, we're getting close to March. Those days are getting longer, and that sun angle's climbing up a little bit higher, so that helps melt snow even on cold days. But it looks as though we're going to see this system probably followed by another one early to mid-next week. So it looks to be, across the United States, a fairly busy pattern as we get into early March, with storm systems going coast to coast about every 3 to 4 days.
And that is part and parcel of what normally would happen, I think, about this time of year. Is that correct?
That is correct. You tend to see the jet stream slowing down a little bit this time of year. And what that does is that makes systems move a little bit slower. You also tend to see more weather systems when the jet stream starts to slow down. And that is something that is one reason why we tend to see the weather get more busy as you get into late winter and early spring. And it looks like this year, at least March into April, is going to keep us weather forecasters busy in the Corn Belt Midwest to keep an eye on things moving through.
Okay, I want to go into California and the Southeast. I know two different parts of the world, but it's been awfully dry in one and awfully wet in the other.
Sure.
Will conditions change in either of them?
Well, it does look like the very dry conditions that have developed in California over the last couple of months will persist for a little longer. However, it does look like March is going to be a more wet month for California and parts of the southwestern United States. I don't think it'll be enough to catch up for the deficits that they've been building here over the last 8 to 12 weeks. However, the prospects for a little more rain and mountain snow looks better. Southeastern parts of the United States have been wet, as we well know. And you know, long term, as we look at the next week, next two, next 3 or 4 weeks, the tendency is for more wet weather to still come into the southeastern United States.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hey, have you picked those tickets up yet? If not, right now. And don't wait, please. Get yourself registered for the all-day Ag Outlook. The cost is just $30. That includes a morning coffee and a Beef House roll, plus a Beef House lunch, and a lineup that looks like this. We'll kick off the day with Steve Mulberger. He's the Vice President of Crop Risk Services. And we'll talk about what he sees as the future of agriculture. Matt Bennett, Aaron Curtis, Brian Stark, and Chuck Shelby will be there for the Cash Grain Panel. We'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass. That's right, he'll be on site from Nutrien Ag Solutions. And we'll take a look at soybeans and pricing with Dave Chatterton, Merrill Crowley, Ellen Dearden, and Chip Nellinger, all names you should be familiar with from our daily ag programming. Gary Schnitke from the University of Illinois will be there, and Lance Honig from USDA NASS. He's the chief of the crops branch. That'll start the afternoon sessions. We'll take up ARC PLC, the decision there, crop insurance and SCO, and discuss how NASS collects data and how important the farmer is in that process. Oh, and you can ask absolutely any question you want of Gary and or Lance or any of the rest of the crew. We'll wrap up the day with Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, Mike Zuzulo, Jackie Vakes, and Dan Zwicker. And Dan has a mullet. That's worth the $30 all on its own. 800-898-1065 or online at willag.org to get your tickets for next Tuesday's all-day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Our doors open at 9 a.m. in the Eastern Time Zone, 8 a.m. in the Central Time Zone. It's a Tuesday afternoon. We always take a look at the agricultural energies. Today, we're joined by Dan O'Brien. He's at K-State Extension in Kansas. Hey, thanks so much for being with us today.
Sure.
Well, let's start with the profitability of ethanol plants. Did it change since we talked last month?
Since January, we're seeing the same numbers in terms of an estimate of a loss of 25 cents a gallon. And for the preliminary February numbers, again, we're not quite all the way through the month in terms of the data, estimating about $1.25 ethanol price per gallon sold, a break-even cost about $1.49. So what had been kind of an improving picture in October, November, where we were just about breaking even, and in December, down 11 cents, now here in January, February again, dropped off to 25 under. So I think the when you look at the root cause, again, the it's mainly ethanol price. Again, the corn prices, DDG prices have gone sideways, but weakness on the ethanol sales side, that pretty much tells the story and is driving the current shortfall in profitability. Now, I have not heard of more large waves of ethanol plant idling or closures. There's, you know, we have it's a pretty tough group that's hanging in there, but. But when you start looking at 25 cents a gallon losses, and if that continues to perpetuate, it spells tough times for the ethanol industry and weakness in the U.S. corn market, and that's neither one of those sectors of the ag economy won't want to see those outcomes.
Yeah, not large waves, but Poet, of course, idled a plant in our listing area in Indiana last summer and said they were cutting back. And then recently, Green Plains Ethanol said, you know what, we're not going to be an ethanol first company at this point. We're going to look mostly at the byproducts, so I suppose that's, DDGs and feed rather than ethanol. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, from a Western Corn Belt perspective, and when you and I were talking about this earlier, before we became we came on air, my first thought was, gosh, are they, so they're going into feeding? What are they going to do with all that?
Yeah, and at which point I looked it up and did not realize that Green Plains was also the Green Plains Cattle Company. And they operate big feedlots in 17, 30,000, 50,000, and 105,000 purchased, and another 100,000 in 2018. So they operate big feedlots.
At least a couple of those here in Kansas, one in Leota, and the other in Sublette, and there are others down further south in Texas. And one thing that we've seen in the past in the Western Corn Belt has been, efforts to link cattle feeding with ethanol plants close at hand, and even to try to get other synergies involved to try to more efficiently make these systems, quote, hum. And there have been some successes, some failures in doing that. But, you know, they see meat demand going well, then gosh, if you're feeding cattle and if you can bring DDGs into feedlots with all that much more efficiency, and it would make sense that as a profitable strategy, looking at this from an outsider's perspective, that could be a winning, survivable, sustainable strategy for someone for a company that has their feet both in the livestock feeding and in the ethanol industries, and to try to bring them together and to capture the efficiencies and whatever profitabilities you can get as a whole system.
No, that's interesting. Let's get back to the ethanol directly, though. What's production like for ethanol across the United States?
Well, we had fallen off when you look at where we were about the end of the summer of 2019, we'd fallen down to levels that we hadn't seen since at least temporarily since 2016-17. Then we came back up, and the last few weeks of 2019 heading into 2020, we were seeing pretty good ethanol production. Now again, we've kind of cyclically come back down off of that, haven't dropped all the way down to the lows we'd seen before. Probably the most telling issue that's worrisome, no doubt, to the ethanol plants and ethanol industry is that stocks here of late have, in the last few weeks, have started to climb, and that becomes a burden on any of these ag markets when you have unused inventory sitting there, and stocks climbing is not a good foreboding message at all. If you can combine those two words in terms of future prices for ethanol and the ethanol plant profitability.
It appears the coronavirus problem that has been not completely confined, of course, to China, is spreading across parts of the planet. What happens if it weakens the U.S. economy?
Well, that's a big if. If it weakens the U.S. economy, right now, I don't know that our general economic activity has slowed that much, but the fears of this just within the last few days have certainly hit the stock market, no doubt causing people to think twice about, and businesses to think twice about their investments, et cetera. And, anything that shakes the confidence of investors, of businesses, of farmers going forward is a negative on movement of product and the free flow of inputs and outputs. And I guess that's large scale hand waving economist talk for saying, yeah, it could be a problem. let's hope it isn't. But that, the heightened fear and uncertainty in any of our, well, in the corn market, in the ethanol market, in the fuel market, whatever, it tends to drive people to hold inventories a little bit more, to be safe because they're unsure of the future. And that extra caution slows things down and has a cumulative negative effect. We'll see. Here in our part of the world, in the Western Corn Belt, we have reports of a few cases. There was a case in Omaha just that came about. There was one in Kansas. We haven't seen epidemic proportions of anything, but it's on people's minds, and surely has affected the financial and commodity markets. So the last thing I'd say on that is that I know that the futures, with the factors they look at, are pretty cautious. I'm going to be watching the basis levels in these local markets, at ethanol plants, at local elevators, at livestock feeders, and to see if movement is still happening. You know, so if we still have underlying strong demand out in the ag sector, even with the futures softening, still if we have underlying strength in usage, then I think you'd see the basis probably reflect that. So for you all in the Eastern Corn Belt and for us in the West, I think that's the thing that we'll be watching at this time.
How strong is corn basis in your area?
We have the highest corn basis that we've had since 2016. And we're extremely strong in a lot at the major terminals. So with the so-so performance of futures, we've seen our basis again. In places where here at the first part of the year you'd see 20, 30 cent under basis levels, we're at 10, 15 or better. Salina's pretty strong. Garden City's strong. Again, you pull up our ag manager charts for the Western Corn Belt, and I know if you have ethanol plants that have strong basis too in the Eastern Corn Belt, then charts to show that. You know, the local cash market, local demand, particularly out here where we have livestock feeding, export demand positively affecting some of that. We've seen as good a basis as we've seen for a while. We're not. It's the type of thing where it doesn't gain a lot of headlines, but our farmers are shifting their attention not just what the futures are doing, but they're starting to monitor closely those basis bids, because that's pretty much where our game is at right now.
What do you think of the ethanol RBOB ratio at this time?
Well, it's when you look at where that ratio has been bouncing around from in the last several months, when you go back to December, it had dropped down to at the start of December, it was at 0.9. It was like, again, $1.41 ethanol to RBOB at $1.57. Then we came into the first of January after the first of the year, we were at 1.37 ethanol, 1.70 RBOB, that 0.8 ratio. Starting February, we ethanol hadn't changed much, but the RBOB had dropped off again from 1.35 to ratio to 1.47 for RBOB, so 0.9. And here yesterday, back down to 0.8, so 1.31 to 1.61. So I can only imagine that fuel blenders are pulling out their hair. You know, as these margins are kind of volatilely bouncing back and forth, it'd have to be a challenge, and challenge for those folks, and probably makes them all that much more attentive to hedging and risk management programs to try to protect themselves.
Hey, thanks so much, Dan.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
You too. Dan O'Brien is with K-State University Extension. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon. New Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online and buy your tickets for the all-day agricultural outlook right now at willag.org or by dialing this number, 800-898-1065. I'm Todd Gleason.